Hello and welcome to the Eat PhD Team podcast, the podcast here to help you with your relationship with food and body by giving you evidence-based techniques to support yourself with a sprinkling of feminism, a dash of dismantling diet culture and a side of vulnerability as we share our own messy lives with you. I'm Emilia, a registered nutritionist and PhD with the sole purpose of making your life happier and healthier. If you love it, please do go wild and share it. And if you're ready for support with our coaching, details are in the show notes. Hello and welcome to episode number 296 of the Eat PhD Team podcast with myself and Georgia. Hi, Georgia. How are you?
Hello. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. I'm enjoying your aesthetic today with the green tea and the plant behind you and like the muted colours and the muted mug. It's a good aesthetic.
Thank you. Welcome. So Etsy, Instagram, Pinterest worthy.
It is. It really is. I'm quite jealous, to be quite frank, but that's okay because
thanks.
You know, you own the aesthetics for the team. Anna, you're pretty aesthetic. You're generally pretty aesthetic in your green.
I'm just beige, honestly.
Yeah, but it's consistent and it works. I'm just in a phase where I'm like, I'm just freezing all the time. So I'm just in my knitwear, like the drawers of my knitwear, like what have I got left? It's clean and warm. Double knitwear on most days this week. It's wild. I mean, I like it. I quite like the weather outside, but it's bloody freezing.
I am wearing a blanket from the waist down just in case you thought too. I was cool. But I've got a teddy blanket on, so.
Hey, needs must. And we're all drinking hot drinks. Look, we're into sensory soothing. That's what it is. The warmth, the comfort. We've all got some sort of fleece. Yeah. This is our lives.
It's going to be a sad day when I have to. I feel like this is part of ET PhD. The amount of people are like, oh, she please on again. I'm like, yes.
And it is notorious. It's, look, if you're going to be known for anything, a nice, cute fleece is a pretty good thing to have.
I mean, I've got plenty of other really crappy clothes. So, I mean, I'll come bring them out next time.
Word of warning, I know I said this before, but like I think because I was commenting today about how hungry I am when I run, and I had a little bit of a spell off running. I just wasn't feeling it at all, and I run for enjoyment. Like, I don't run for anything else other than enjoyment. So if I don't enjoy it, I'm not going to do it. But then I was running this morning because I found Taylor's Era's set list on Spotify, and I want to make sure that I know all the words, so I thought this is a good opportunity to do it. And then I took it as an opportunity to actually train myself, because the problem that I'm facing is that, well, it's not a big problem to have, is that I have standing tickets at Murrayfield for Taylor Swift in summer, which I am going to, if it causes early labor, like I'm going to be in that Taylor Swift concert. And then I'm like, okay, so I'm gonna have to train myself. So I decided today to do my first training session of like running while singing the set list out loud. I'd managed about 20 minutes, and then I was like, oh my god, I'm gonna die, I need to eat right now. And then since I got back, I've just been like, I just need to eat every half an hour to 50 minutes or so. I'm just like, oh my god, what can I eat? And snack central right now. And because of that, I keep burping, so I apologize. It's where I was going with that. I'll try and mute myself. One day I'll forget and just be like, it's all downhill from here. But yeah, I might have to. If anyone has seated tickets for Murrayfield for Taylor, there may be a time where I might have to say, does anyone want my standing tickets in return for seated? So if you do have seated, you just let me know just in case, because standing tickets are much better and they're going to be good. They're good tickets. So I will happily take your back seat. Seated tickets. Well, not yet, but there's a potential. So if you want to get in there, you let me know now. I'm not missing that. Okay. Anyone have anything exciting to share before we get started?
I can never think of anything when you ask. It's not like afterwards I'm like, oh, I should have said this. But sometimes I'm like, oh, that would have been interesting. But it's usually like 2 days later. So clearly I'm not living a very exciting life.
I mean, is anyone? What I've noticed recently is, what I think is happening is, how do I say this? I think, I'm a little bit hopeful. I think that non-nutrition podcasts that talk about nutrition, that kind of stuff that we talk about a lot in terms of glucose monitoring and fasting and all of the shit that comes out of them, I think they are kind of getting moved to the side, you know. I think people are, on the whole, becoming much more aware to the sensationalist, business focused drive of those podcasts. And I think things are shifting a little bit, especially for, I don't know about you in terms of the questions you've had, but like questions I get on my question box now, and just in general, like the type of content that I see, even from those podcasts, it's become kind of obviously extreme, as opposed to like, this could be true. Like, it's obviously like wild, wacky stuff that they're sharing now. I'm kind of hopeful. So that's nice. Or am I being naive?
Nice to have some hope.
I don't notice it too much because I tend not to follow those accounts unless there's a lot of hysteria and I'll have a quick check-in. And then after a week, I'm like, okay, I've seen what I need to see, I've seen enough, and I'll unfollow. But it does mean that when that noise dies down, I don't notice. I'm
I
out of the loop, but it's for my own
fair.
mental well-being.
Fair. I saw James Smith did a video on kind of the business nature of podcasts like Diary of a CEO, maybe Modern Wisdom, I'm not sure, but like a couple of podcasts anyway that he put in there, and he kind of broke it down in terms of like he did it really well, in terms of like introducing podcasts with like credible people on there, credible nutrition people. And he did start, like someone did start off with that, to get buy-in, and then to ensure like sensationalism, to get more engagement, to get more sponsorship. Then you get more and more extreme, you get more and more arguments, you get more and more engagement, and so you get more and more money. And he did it in like the way that he does well in terms of making these things so obvious when you can see them. And I do think that, yeah, I do see a shift, which is really, really nice. And I don't think it's our echo chamber. I think people are starting to be switched on. Although I did see, this is not podcast nutrition related, but I did see someone sent me the Telegraph doing an article, and it was something like, "Are bananas the new Mars bar?" And it was like the pros and cons of eating bananas. And I thought, someone has sat and written an article on the pros and cons of eating a banana. Like, that is nobody in the world's problem. Should they or should they not eat a banana? Nobody. And someone, and it's the Telegraph as well. It's not like it's the Sun. It's like wild. So
Someone edited that and then okayed it and was like, run it, front page. This is the one.
yeah, multiple people have seen it. It is wild. And you think that you're like, I sometimes think, God, how many times can I talk about binge eating in this way? And then I see stuff like that, and I'm like, many more times, Amelia, many more times, because this is what we're filtering out.
That reminds me of, do you remember the YouTube kind of sensation diet? And I think this is like early to mid 2000s when there was that lady that was just like, oh, you just eat 30 bananas a day. And that was her diet. And her diet was just like, everyone should just eat 30 bananas a day and it solves your life problems. And now we're having a debate of like whether or not it's going to kill you or if it's, I saw that and it was like, it's a Mars bar in a yellow skin. And I was like,
Oh my God.
delicious.
Oh, I know.
Great.
Please, can I have some? Wow, I didn't see that, but that is wild. That is wild. And
Beautiful.
it's making me hungry, so we'll move on. Anna, do you want to go first with questions today?
Sure thing. Ways to become more resilient to stress, or how to make stress at work feel less stressful.
I actually gave a talk on stress yesterday. Not on like, not from like a psychological point of view, like within my scope in terms of supporting people, clients with stress, because everyone has, most of us have stressful lives. So it's work related.
Work and just in general, I think. So it
Life.
has less of an impact, yeah.
Well, listen, babe, we've all got the same 24 hours in the day, okay? If you feel stressed, then that's on you. No, please definitely not. Don't believe that. So I think there's a couple of things of like, there's the managing the stress input, and then there's the managing the response, right? So there's what's causing the stress and then managing your reaction or your response to that stress. So I think the former, especially looking at things like boundaries or reframing or assertiveness, all of those things are really important when it comes to, let's take work stress, for example. Is it the, like a normal amount of work and it's just like that's causing you to stress, or is it because you are checking your emails when you get home and then getting like stressy about the way an email's been written? Or are you stressed because you've said yes to too many things, because you struggle to be assertive in your workplace, and so it's adding to your workload? Or are you stressed because you're not taking lunch breaks because you feel like you've always got more to do because you keep saying yes? Looking at the causes of that feeling stressed is the most important thing. Some of the things you can change and some of the things you can't change. Like, I imagine, you know, having four children and a job alone is very stressful, as an example, right? And like, you can't change those things, but you can potentially change little parts of those things to help manage the stress. And then it's really about like looking at your stress management skills that you can do to respond, like, so you can learn to respond to them and move through the stress rather than, you know, sitting in it.
Yeah, I think moving, how do I word this? I think when we think of stress management, we think like we're just going to be this ultimate chill, calm person. And I mean, stress is inevitable. What we want to work towards is like being able to adapt and have that kind of like flexible attitude that we can just take it in our stride. And like you said, Amelia, like making sure that you are doing the things that are going to help to regulate emotions and regulate nervous system, but also checking in with the behaviors and how you might be feeding into the like the stress reaction cycle, and understanding like looking at the things that you're telling yourself. Like I am one that I will tell myself, I'll work myself up in the morning being like, I've got so much to do today. Well, of course I'm going to feel stressed before I've even started my day. Whereas if I'm going, like, yeah, today's full on, let's plan it out so it feels more manageable, then I'm starting my day in a much calmer headspace.
I always just say to myself, like, you always get it done. And if you don't get it done, you've survived every time you haven't got it done. Like, you will get it done. And it's like, I think you're totally right. I think a large, not all, like, but a lot of the stress that we feel is a result of the self-criticism and the overthinking and the preoccupation and the telling yourself you're too busy and just getting up in the morning being like, I'm so busy. How does it even feel in your body right now to be like, oh my gosh, I've got so much to do? Like, you can even feel it in your body being like, oh, like starting to get tense. Whereas if you say to yourself, oh, I've got a lot to do today, but I'll always get it done. Like, the difference that makes, and it's then that part at least, is a bit of a choice. Although, of course, some people have tendencies, you know, genetic tendencies, etc., to err towards one way or the other, but there is a choice within that. Okay, Georgia. Georgia?
Did you just speak to me? Sorry, my internet keeps cutting out. It keeps saying unstable. I'm like, very relatable. This week, technical issues have been like through the roof.
Hope everyone enjoyed that 15 seconds of silence to calm before you moved on.
Gold. Golden. Okay, cool. So yeah, this next question, actually, it's along the same lines. So it'll be a really interesting addition to that conversation. One of Katie's clients has said, let's talk stress. I have a job that fully aligns with my values and it brings me purpose. It's something I'm good at. I do think it's something I uniquely contribute to the world, and it's also very stressful and emotionally draining. So much work advice is centered around finding work that aligns with your values, etc. And I have that, but I still need a way to limit the emotional toll. I don't work 80-hour weeks or anything like that. It's not a time boundary issue. I deal with life and death issues, drug overdoses, mental illness, homelessness, etc. And so the content is quite heavy, and as CEO, I feel responsible for so much, and yet not able to make the changes at a pace that I would like, given funding issues, societal structures, government, etc.? A long question, but any tips to help find more balance?
Love that question. I always think that that narrative of like, oh, if you love your job, you'll never work a day in your life. I've said this a few times, is the worst hustle culture message that we've been given. One of the worst up there with women, you can have it all, and a few other ones. Like, because it guilts you into thinking like, well, do I not love my job enough? Or like, what's wrong with me that I can't do this job that I love and I have purpose in and I contribute to the world, and I'm stressed by it? How dare I be stressed by it when I'm so lucky to get to do this? And it doesn't matter if you love your job or not, like the emotional toll, especially in a job like you've described, which has huge emotional requirement from you. And there's probably an element there too of like empathy fatigue as well, where you are, I would imagine, a highly empathetic person, and the frustrations, like you said, of not being able to act on anything straight away. Like, it makes complete sense that you feel that stress. So I think one of the most important things is, and I think that this person sounds like they're there, but like acknowledging that it makes complete sense that you feel stressed and potentially, on the way to burnout. And obviously, a lot of the work you do with Katie is going to help so much with this in terms of somatic practices and nervous system regulation. It's, number one, I would say, for you in terms of managing that.
I would think as well, Kate will help you explore some ways to help practice emotional rest, because I think that's going to be key for you. Because if you are holding on to that emotional stress, then it's just going to be adding on. I mean, it's just like when we suppress feelings, like eventually they come out, and it's in that same sense. So if you don't already, I would obviously recommend some journaling, or if you have someone that you feel you can speak to quite vulnerably, open, whether that's a friend, someone close, or therapist, definitely gonna offer some help with that, I think.
And it sounds like the boundaries are great. This person isn't working crazy hours, but it's a heavy, emotionally draining sounding job. And I think sometimes we forget, and I'm super guilty of this, so just imagine that I'm pretty much talking to myself, that we forget sometimes to, for want of a better phrase, like lighten up and have some fun times as well. So that balancing the seriousness and the focus and the concentration that comes with the emotional toll, like kind of topping yourself up, back up with joy in your life. Whether it's just something silly like going to see a comedy show or like doing a hobby that makes you really happy, really relaxed, like whether that's gardening or hanging out with your friends or like Amelia, you were super into like skateboarding just for the joy of it and like all of these things, horse riding, something that just makes you feel really happy, I think can be really helpful for having that balance, because it is a lot.
Yeah, and I think kind of touching on that empathy, compassion distinction is probably quite helpful. It's helpful for anyone in like a helping profession, where we compassion fatigue doesn't exist, and people will often say, oh, I've got compassion fatigue, or maybe that's what it is. And it's not, it's empathetic distress that you feel, or you could potentially feel. And it's often empathetic distress that contributes to feelings of like energetic burnout and emotional burnout. And I wonder if in your work you can look at, okay, am I like feeling other people's pain and taking that on, or am I taking action to help alleviate that pain? And sounds to me like you're taking a lot of action, but I wonder how much you are experiencing empathy versus compassion. And you don't want to not feel empathy. And I think that's naive to think anyone in a helping profession would not feel empathy. But that distinction of trying to not get lost in other people's stuff and their pain, whether that be, again, like boundaries, or just how you engage with people. and feel about them, and then working on compassion, like having empathy for sure, having an understanding and understanding their pain, but then of course taking the action. Your focus for your job, it sounds like, is both, but it's the action part. So I think, and we speak to a lot of coaches in this situation too, and we've all probably been those coaches too, where we just feel so much of what people are going through. And it's really about, you can care so much, but the best way that you can support someone in a job like this or a job like yours, I don't know what it is, but by the sounds of things, is not by getting lost in that stuff, but being able to keep a bit of a distance and then, take action. Okay. How do you take into account how little time you have? It's almost the new year. It's been another month, another year, another decade, and not get stressed or freaked out about it, but instead find a soft focus.
I don't know about you guys, but when it comes to this kind of thing, I've had to do a lot of work on this recently with like aging and my hair going grey, and a lot of talk from my mom about changes that she's been going through physically as well. And I feel like I've flipped this a little bit in terms of, instead of times running out, it's more, I'm so grateful for every new year, every month, year, decade that I get to exist and I get to live. So I don't know if that's a bit of a reframe that feels a bit alien, but rather than there's not enough time and there's less time and it's flying by, it's more like, wow, look how much time I've had. This is amazing. I'm so grateful because I've certainly grown up with people who have not had the time that I've had. They've died a lot younger in my teens. We had friends at school. And every time I get to celebrate something when people are freaking out about, oh, I'm nearly 30, I'm nearly 40, I'm like, well, that's amazing. Like, that's amazing. I hope you get to 50, 60, 70. Like, so yeah, I think from my point of view, it would just be flipping that round. And rather than feeling like that lack, feeling the abundance of, look at what I have and have had and hope to continue to have.
I love that. I love that answer. Thanks for sharing that. I agree. I think, in a similar sort of situation of, seeing people around me who maybe haven't lived as much life or might not get to live as much life, and it really does put things into perspective. There's a saying called, I want to say it's called sober joy or something like that. It was described in a book that I read about, I think it was about, I don't even know. Maybe it was 4,000 weeks, probably. But the idea of sober joy being like, the narrative story that they were talking about when I read it was about a woman who, I think her husband got diagnosed with terminal cancer and died like quite quickly. And the almost joy that she was able to experience because she realized the finitude of life. She realized how time is always running out, and it gave her like almost like this new lease of getting the most out of every opportunity. And I think for me, like, I agree with you, a lot of it's to do with like cultivating positive age beliefs. I find that's completely changed my perspective on time and getting older, that alongside some other, things. But Catherine Ryan always says, like, aging is a gift. And every year that you get older is like another year that you've been given, and how lucky we are to do that. So, I think there's an element of that. But I also think really not getting obsessed with doing everything, but recognizing because of the finitude of life, it is important to take time to enjoy the small things or to do the things that you've been putting off. Like, what is it that you're waiting for? And I think so many times we say, oh, I'd quite like to do that. I'd quite like to do this. Something I've found quite interesting since being pregnant is the other day, I've never in my life done this, maybe when I was really young, but the other day I wrote a list of places that I want to visit still. I haven't done that. I know that I've been able to travel, I've been able to go where I want, And then I had like five places where I'm like, I've not been there yet. I really want to go there yet. And I'm like, that's because, especially some of the places I put down, like, I can't go there right now. And I might not be able to go there for a very long time. But as soon as I thought it's been taken away from me, I'm like, oh my God, I need to do these things. And I thought, like, I was like, oh, that's really interesting that that's how that's coming out. And it's not a sadness, but it's a reminder of like, well, what can I do now? What do I want to do now? And gosh, a year ago, I should have just gone to Hawaii. I don't feel like that at all. Like, I really don't.
Weirdly, I had that thought. I was like, because I remember you saying on one podcast episode that you and your best friend would go there as like your anniversary. I was like, I wonder how long that is, and is that still gonna, will you take a
I know.
baby? Probably.
Well, probably my best friend will be like another auntie to this baby. So, probably we'll just figure it out. And that's what you do. You figure it out, right? Whatever that looks like. Although I'm not being naive to the reality of what it's actually going to look like. So, yeah, I think embracing as much, trying like stopping things off. Because I think sometimes a lot of this is to do with like things that we maybe haven't achieved or we fear that we won't achieve. Some of those things you might not achieve and making peace with that. And then things that are still within your control that you can, figuring out, okay, well, what am I waiting for?
That's one of my favorite things from 4,000 Weeks. Like, I've recommended that book to so many people because I cried a few times reading it, but it was like the kind of slap in the face that I needed. And one of the things that he says is like, okay, you're going to die with a to-do list, so what's your priority here? And I was like, wow, I'm really never going to get everything done that I have on my mind. And every day that list is going to change because I'll tick something off and I'll put five new things on there. And it really helps with like, okay, well, what can I just let go of and be like, never mind. I don't mind if I die and that's undone. And then what things am I like, no, these are important to me. And I really rate the message and the way that he writes about time in that book as well, for sure.
Yeah, we love that book. I feel like we should have some sort of commission code for that book, although I might have wasted my opportunity of that. But everywhere I've been for the last 2 years, I'm like, so Oliver Berkman,
I've
get out my head.
been saying Oliver Blakeman, oh my God.
Good.
Love the title. Don't remember the author, but never mind.
Okay, and a question.
How to start implementing habits you built when something comes and throws you off track, slash you're out of your normal routine. I'm struggling to get back into it and feel a bit out of control of my life because of it.
I think there's a wider kind of not issue, but there's a wider kind of context to this, in that you're looking for control and willpower. And I actually wrote something about this today. I say wrote something about this. I did a thread post about this. Okay, so it was at least two sentences. What was it? The thread post was, well, it wasn't. It was part of it. But changing habits isn't about willpower. It's about awareness. And so look at maybe why you're struggling now. What is it? Where is your resistance to it? Why are you struggling to do it? Is it because you're waiting for the motivation, the willpower to do these things? Because that won't come. Well, it might come, but it might be waiting a while. Willpower is not something that we want to rely on when it comes to habit change. Instead, think about, okay, well, why do I want to go to the gym? Why do I want to eat regularly? Why is it like, what purpose is does that serve for me? Oh, the gym makes me feel great in my body. The gym gives me like a bit of a boost for my productivity in the morning. The gym, I don't know, allows me to sing Taylor Swift set list, whatever that is, right? Can you get curious about those things and then think, okay, well, because I want to have a really productive day tomorrow, I'm going to go and get my half an hour gym session done in the morning, just get it done because I know it's going to help with my productivity. Looking more towards that side of things rather than, okay, I need to find the willpower to do these things to make me feel like I've got some sense of control.
But in terms of just bringing them back in, well, I think frame, obviously I'm going to say you've not gone off track. There is no track, and then you can't be on or off it. But you're aware of habits that support you in feeling your best, and I would pick two or three that I always go for, kind of a nutrition target, a mindfulness headspace target, and a movement target. And that's what I'd be aiming for each day. If you can do more, great. But let's just start getting back into the rhythm of it before psyching yourself out, overwhelming yourself, trying to do everything all at once. Just be gentle.
Be gentle with yourself. You're doing the best you can. Do you remember that? That was a meme that was going around for quite a long time. Not a meme, an Instagram quote before the days of memes. I was probably not doing the best I could. But we are. We are all doing the best we can from where we are, apparently. Georgia.
I've realised that the fear of weight gain has become a limiting belief. And when asked by Roz why I choose to believe this, I really couldn't answer. Obviously, all the usual diet culture, weight comments, etc. I'm aware of all of that, but I don't know why I still choose to believe it. The word choose actually made me very curious because it feels like it's not a choice. Any thoughts?
Love your curiosity, love your awareness of your word choice, etc. And obviously, if you search for weight gain in the Spotify podcast part of ATPHD, you'll see like three, I think, episodes fully dedicated to this. So I definitely listen to those ones. I think there's an added element, and I don't know your backstory. But the most recent podcast I did on the fear of weight gain is around after losing weight. And I think if you've been in a larger body before, there's an added element of what you attribute being in a larger body to. And that doesn't necessarily feel like a conscious choice. For example, you may have experienced 10 years of bullying in a larger body, as an example. And so that you've really internalized, you may have really internalized that such that you have a fear of weight gain. It's not a choice. It's not necessarily a choice. It's just this inherent fear of revisiting those feelings that you experienced at that time, as an example, right? But I think it's hard, right? Because it is a choice, but it's un. It is a choice, but there's lots of reasons why it might not feel like one, right? And show yourself compassion for that. What do you guys think?
I think this is probably a little bit of like lived experience being the proof that we have so far. So we believe something to be true because we've experienced it in the past and believe it to continue to be true. But the curiosity side, I think, is important because it allows us to open up a potential different experience and therefore provide the proof that we need. But we can't get that proof until we kind of accept, okay, that's something that I think, but also I'm open to something else. And I usually have an excellent, terrible analogy, but I just don't have one in my head right now. But I guess it's kind of like, I remember we said on a podcast a while ago, you were kind of saying, like, okay, I believe the sky to be this particular color, like gray, because I always see it and it's gray. But actually, someone's saying, well, the sky is blue. And then you need a clear day where there's no clouds to go, oh, okay, yeah, it is blue. Cool. I didn't think that. We kind of need that lived experience to be able to prove ourselves wrong. So I'll quit while I'm ahead without any more
But
analogies.
such a good point, because it's like, well, how do you see the blue sky? You challenge yourself to, you maybe fly to, I don't know, somewhere sunny, Austin,
Quiet.
to see the blue, yeah, Hawaii, to see the blue sky. And this is the point. I wonder how you're challenging this for yourself right now. Are you surrounding yourself with people who confirm these beliefs? Do you live in an echo chamber on social media of people that confirm these beliefs? Do you ever allow yourself to gain weight and challenge that? Do you surround yourself with people in larger bodies who like challenge that belief, who are equally as incredible as you are? Like, how are you challenging the narrative that you have? Are you living in a world that confirms it, and then wondering why you still think it? Okay. It's me. Best question. Best chance question. In what area or when do you think you have failed? In what area or when do you think you have failed? And in owning and knowing this, how has it helped you to change for the better? Ma, where do we start?
I don't know. I was just going to say, I was like, that list could be endless.
I failed
Our
with
faces were
men.
beautiful then, though. They were just like,
I
what?
failed with men. I failed massively with men. And I don't mean this in a, I don't feel bad about it or I'm regretful about it, but my last toxic relationship ended in 2020 and I kept choosing this, I kept doing the red flag hunt, laughing about it, sharing the memes about it, being like, oh, it's just my type, ignoring them. I failed to acknowledge my choice in men. I failed to change my choice in men until 2020, where my life got flipped, turned upside down. And it was really hard, and it took me years to get over that relationship and friendship and situation that arose from all of that. It gave me it, honestly like a year of really poor, like really struggled with things. I've never since that point picked a man like that again. And I'm not saying that I've, picked all of these amazing men or I've got it necessarily got things right. I'm like, I don't mean that. I just mean I've dated a couple of men who were had red flags, more red flags than I would like. A couple of times since then, and both times immediately or within a few weeks, I've been like, oh, I feel this in my body. This feels wrong. And the absolute pain of 2020, it's still in. It's I have a bit of my heart has gone missing. Like it's in my bones. And when I date people who follow that same pattern, that failure to me is like, don't do not do this again. Like it's embarrassing now at 37 years old. It hasn't been when I've been 37, but like at this point in my life, this is embarrassing. It's not, but for me, it would feel like I hadn't learned from that failure. So I'm so grateful for it, but it's probably one of that those choices have meant probably been the biggest failures. But I mean, I had a great time for a long time, so I don't regret any of it. But yeah, I'd say that's mine.
What was the last part of the question?
Knowing this, how has it helped you to change for the better?
You want me to go? You look like you're
Yeah,
thinking.
I'm just trying to pick through which
Yeah,
one.
it's quite hard. Like, I think that for me, there's probably a lot of small ones that have just accumulated and helped me. But if I had to think of one big one, like Emilio, sorry, but it's jumping on the bandwagon if it's a man, shockingly, a relationship that wasn't great. And what my failure was to listen to myself and leave when I should have. And it became really unpleasant. I wasn't myself. Like I was controlled by somebody else's like behaviors, wants, choices, everything, even down to what I would choose to wear in the day was like his choice. And I explained away too much, like it's okay, it's just one small thing. And I kept forgiving and forgiving and forgiving, ignoring what I was seeing. And that was my failure to myself, was not responding the first time with, wait a minute, this isn't right. But knowing my part in that has been really helpful because it gave me forgiveness really quickly, understanding why that happened, and understanding like that part of me. And it gave me the strength to get really clear on like what's okay and what's not okay very quickly, so that moving forward, like not like any red flag and I'm just like, oh, just run away, but more like, okay, I'm going to reset myself here and explain that that's not acceptable and see how this conversation goes. And so it made me grow very quickly in terms of my understanding of myself and my drive to understand myself, but also to prevent that from ever happening again and, have healthier relationships. So yeah, I failed to listen to myself.
Love that. Right, come on, Anna. Find one deep down.
I know. I think my biggest failure was not being open to forgiveness.
Interesting.
'Cause for me, I have had difficult relationships with my siblings. And because I was, don't get me wrong, that was hurt, but because I was holding grudges, I missed out on probably 2 years of my niece, and she is the best thing ever. So I think that's the thing that I've learned, is that it's okay to forgive and stay boundaried, because a lot of joy can come from it.
I love that too. And forgiveness is self-care. If you can't forgive the other person, forgive for yourself. Like the release of forgiveness is wild. But you cannot just choose to be like, oh, forgive you, and that's it. Only. Love that. Okay, Anna.
Was it back to me?
Tis.
Is this a light question? Like, what's your favorite ice cream or something like
Okay,
that? I need that now.
let me just sift through. You know what? Really liked how Georgia described the roadmap on the ETPHD coaching page. I would like it if you could talk through it a little bit more. Thank you.
There you go, Georgia. You might need to get up to remind yourself.
Yeah, I definitely do, just to see what we have there. It was more to sort of give the overview of what happens throughout coaching. I hope my computer doesn't start making noise now, though it does. I can't. It comes up with a reel and you're like, oh my God, well, it's going to play out that. I think we're okay. And we're also relying on my internet as well.
Well, I can always read it out to you
Go for it.
if that's better. I mean,
That's faster.
I'll have to get up to, but
This week has been nothing but technical issues for our whole team.
I've been excelling at tech today. I've been
You've
excelling.
made up for it. You've brought the team back up.
There was me on Monday morning being like, my intention is calm, and then like by 8 o'clock Monday morning, I was like, it's gonna be a struggle.
I messaged Anna at noon about something, and then we were like, we were both like, should we just have a noon reset, start of the new week from noon Monday? We're like, yeah, let's do that.
Do you know what happened to me? Because we had well, obviously the whole world had that same issue with the platform. But Tuesday I was out of action for the full day because I was at an online conference all day. So my plan was like, great, I'm going to work a really long day on Monday. I'm going to get ahead for Tuesday. It's going to be amazing. Wednesday, I'll be where I need to be, all good. And instead, it got to like Monday evening. I was just like, am I going to work till midnight? Is that what I have to do today? This was not the plan at all.
That's upsetting. When it's outside of your control, it's like, oh.
I know, I was just like, well, this is a very good lesson in acceptance and just letting go of what you can't control.
You know what I was proud of? I didn't even know there was an outage. By the time I went on my phone to do anything on social media, I was like, it was kind of intermittent, but it was pretty much back. And I was like, oh, great. And then everyone was talking about, well, you'd be screwed if your Instagram went down in your business. And I was like, well, why? What happened? Look at me. I am like Zen. I am calm. I am present. Bet you
Take
wish you were
that
me.
for
Okay, ETHD method roadmap. I'm going to read them out to you. One, established nutrition guidelines. Two, mindful eating. Three, self-compassion practice and emotional regulation. Four, battle phase. Five, maintenance phase.
Should we just go through each one, kind of like explaining? I mean, it's your method, you created it, but we could just kind
You
of talk.
articulated it so well. I think the key really is that we understand that a large majority of people that come to us want fat loss, and there's always a fear that if you do the other work, you're gonna gain weight, as if this is one inherently a bad thing, but that's a different discussion. or two, like you can't do it all. Like this kind of sounds like the opposite of what I just said, but like you can establish regular like nutritional regulation, you can practice mindful eating and self-compassion, and you can still lose fat. And when you do that, when you've worked on your relationship with food first and you do these things first and then go into a fat loss phase, which is usually ideal, not always, then your maintenance phase becomes a lot easier. It's like it amazes me, and we've all done it, how many times you go into a different type of diet and you think that just a new external rule is what you need in order to maintain your fat loss this time. And it's not. Again, ties into that willpower statement from earlier. Like you think that you need more willpower or new rules, and you don't. You need to be able to honor your internal hunger and fullness. You need to be able to regulate your emotions. You need to be able to practice self-compassion in your setbacks. All of these things mean that when you do overeat, when you've lost fat, you just get over it because you're a human being and you carry on and you maintain that fat loss. So that's why, like, you know, that's why we structure ETP in that ETPHD in that way. And then obviously, Georgia, you just very nicely articulated it in that flow diagram that's pinned to the ETPHD coaching page if anyone would like to see it.
Yeah, I think because sometimes people say, like, oh, I just don't see how I'll ever get to fat loss because they feel like where what they're needing to do is so far away from that part of the goals. So I think it's nice as a visual. But like one of my favorite things, I have many, but one of them is when I'm working with a client through fat loss, like one recently, she went to Disneyland and like she'd been doing, you know, amazing work. And then she came back and she was like, yeah, so I obviously didn't go to the gym for a week. I've caught a cold, so I won't be going to the gym this week. So that's 2 weeks out. She's vegetarian and celiac as well, so her food options are quite limited. But she was like, I didn't panic about anything, you know, I still ate to like comfortable level of fullness. I was mindful of allowing a bit of hunger during the day. I had fruit and veg where I could, but it's Disneyland. She's like, we walked loads, I had an amazing time. I could never have imagined having a holiday like this, like with or without dieting in the past. She was just like, it was just living my life. And she came back and she was like, but she still lost a bit of weight, like it's crazy. And those moments are awesome because it's like you don't have to be cutting out like every food that you love and tracking everything and like running yourself into the ground to have fat loss. Like you can have fat loss and live your life, and that's amazing. Like, love
Yeah.
it.
And cutting these things out would mean that you would go to Disneyland and then you would eat all of it because you don't normally have it, and you would regain it and not just be out of your routine and still continue to lose a little bit of weight and then just crack on like normal. Great example. Okay, Georgia, question.
Hang on, my internet. Let me just click back on
Would you like,
page.
would do you want me to read it?
I've got it. I've got it. We're good. I'd find it really helpful for some advice or tips on how to keep certain foods in the house. I find it really hard to do this with chocolate in particular, and just wanting to eat it all the time, even when practicing unconditional permission to eat foods. I find it hard not to just eat loads of it and find it easier just to not have things in the house instead. This is kind of back to
Why it's
the.
going to be harder to eat them mindfully if that's how you feel. Like if you're telling yourself that you can't trust yourself to have them, then not keeping them in the house just reaffirms that belief. And then when you do have them, the novelty of having them is like going to be so strong. It's not worn off, which is why obviously we encourage having these foods more frequently. But I do think it's important to set yourself up for success when you have them. And at the moment, having a share bar of chocolate might feel a bit too uncomfortable. There, okay, can you? Like, I used to have a Freddo a day, and that was because I worked in town and could easily pop to the, well, it was next to the post office, so I could pop into the post office and pick up a Freddo when there was still 25p.
Times.
And that was my thing, like, because it was important for me to have chocolate regularly, and I'd get the taste and the satisfaction, and I'd have it earlier on in the day because evening time was more of a tricky time. And then I wasn't thinking about having chocolate later on. But equally, it might be well, whether it's a Freddo or whatever that food is, but also considering, do I need to have something with it to help with feelings of fullness so that I'm not going back feeling unsatisfied because actually a square of chocolate is not actually that filling. So that would be my suggestions.
Totally right. Like, you don't want to necessarily go from never having it to then having it in the house all the time. Like, it might be a phase it approach to doing things. And then there might be other times where, like, you do just have portions in, or you do think, okay, I'm on a bit of a fat loss kick. If I want chocolate, I want to go to the house. I want to go to the shop together rather than having it all in the house. Like, it's, you're trying to move away from the willpower again. Move the willpower and moving towards like the trust in yourself, and that takes time to build. But you're never going to build it if you just keep putting external rules on it by just not keeping it in the house. I would question how long you've been trying this for as well, because realistically, as well, if you've not had any chocolate for ages and you've brought it into the house, it's going to take more than a few weeks of it being there for you to stop overeating on it. There might be some days that you don't, some days that you do, and it will take some time, which is why you might want to do it in like that kind of phasic way, having it socially, or having a Freddo. I really want a Freddo now, like once a day or whatever it may be. It's not great, because as soon as something's in my head now, I'm like, that's it now. Except Freddos are
Wait,
like
this
5 pounds.
part, when you were talking about Mars bars and bananas, I just remember it, like I was a girl guide. I was a good girl guide, and I went to every like camp, and they used to cut the banana, stick Mars bar in it, wrap it in tinfoil, put it, and I was like, I could eat one of those quite happily right now.
Yes, I
So
didn't think I used to like them, but I feel like I'd like that right now.
that sounds very good.
That does sound good. Georgia, do you have anything to add on this?
Only that this is really kind of ringing a bell with the previous question around having like a limiting belief. So if you always keep the food out of the house, and then when you have it in, you overeat it, you're going to keep proving to yourself that that is always going to be the result, because you'll keep stopping. So it's coming back to that sort of curiosity of like, okay, well, I wonder what happens if I continue doing this, and don't predict the outcome of I'll go on this way forever, because the reason that, your coach is helping you reintroduce these foods is that it does work. And so many clients will say to me like, oh, this is never going to happen, oh my God. And then there's always that check-in. I don't know if you guys get that, where they're like, oh, turns out you were right, like I'm kind of okay with it now. And I'm like, yes, we're there. But you only get there if you push through this uncomfortable part. And the uncomfortable parts are the hardest bits, because that's where we want to, you always want to pull back and we always want to stop. But if you push through, on the other side of that is the cool thing that you really, really want. So yeah, just a bit of
Yeah,
encouragement to keep going.
I totally agree. This isn't something that EDPHD have made up. Like, it's based on research. It's based on, some of it's based on like the abstinence violation effect, which is something that you can Google and see what that's all about. But again, the idea of complete abstinence, when you have a violation of that abstinence, you go balls deep in the violation, because you're going to go back into abstinence again. This is not just kind of something that we think will work. It's pretty robust. Okay, great questions. Thank you for sending them in. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. And as always, if you did, please do feel free to like, share, subscribe, and review. And if you would like to chat to me, then you can find details of my Instagram in the show notes.